Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this Best of the Pigskin Dispatch episode of the Football History Headlines for December 27th, we discuss the first meeting on the gridiron of black colleges opposing one another in an NFL championship game results, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories and birthdays of those Hall of Famers, all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. And for this December 27th edition of the Football History Headlines, we are going to cover football action from three different centuries. Yes, the 19th, the 20th, and the 21st centuries all are represented in this edition of history. So let's get right at it. And we'll start off with December 27th, 1892, in Salisbury, North Carolina. Snow blanketed the front yard of Livingstone College. Hundreds of people from around the area were making the trek to the venue to witness what would become the first game that two black colleges would meet on the gridiron as Biddle University, now known as Johnson C. Smith University, traveled from Charlotte to face the Livingstone College. The website ourstate.com lets the story unfold, telling how the crowd had traveled from near and far on foot, by horse, and by wagon to watch a football game and to see history unfold. The teams played two 45-minute halves and wore handmade uniforms produced by women studying in Livingstone's industrial department, and players from both sides raised the funds for a regulation-sized football. In the game, a very controversial play occurred when a Livingstone player picked up a fumble and raced for the tying score. The fumble recovery was ruled out of bounds, and so Biddle hung on to defeat Livingstone 5-0 in this monumental college football game. December 27, 1942, at Shibe Park, Philadelphia. According to the NWW2M.com website, the way that the NFL All-Star Games worked for the first five-year period was that the NFL champs would face a team of hand-picked All-Stars from the league a couple weeks after the title game. Back in December 13th edition of the series, we talked about the Washington Redskins winning the big game in an upset of the Chicago Bears 14-6 at Griffith Park in D.C. Tradition would hold the fifth and final NFL All-Star game, and this format would play out as Washington faced a team of All-Stars coached by Bears staff led by Hunk Anderson. The NFL stars included Bullet Bill Dudley of Pittsburgh at halfback, Bears quarterback Sid Luckman with Eagles signal caller Tommy Thompson, and the line play of Bruiser Kennard and Bulldog Turner. The makeshift NFL All-Star squad overcame the champs that day as Washington Redskins fell 14-17 to the All-Stars. December 27, 1953, at Briggs Stadium in Detroit. The 1953 National Football League Championship had the previous year's champion Detroit Lions at home to face the contending Cleveland Browns. According to a Pro Football Hall of Fame story, this one had some great game-ending drama to it. Legendary Lions quarterback Bobby Lane had been hearing from his substitute tight end Jim Doran all game that he could get open downfield past Browns defender that had been assigned to him all day. The starting end, Leon Hart, had left the game with a knee injury earlier, so Doran was pulled from the defensive side of the ball to fill in. The Lions were down six with a few seconds more than 2 minutes remaining in a contest. The wily old signal caller finally decided to play his wild card in a poker game with the gridiron with the Cleveland defenders that day. And he asked, "Can you still beat that feller?" Lane asked bluntly to Doran in the huddle per the article. "You just know that Jimmy D eyeballed him back and gave him the words of confirmation." The DB on Doran that day was Warren Lahr, and the two opponents had been going at it all day. Doran was now licking his chops as he finally had his quarterback's focus on the advantage he felt he could get over Lahr. Then it happened, a crucial third and long, and Lane took the snap and completed an 18-yard strike to Doran to get past the lead stick. A few plays later, it was Lane to Durian again for a touchdown. After the extra point was nailed, the Detroit Lions held on and beat the Cleveland Browns 17-16 to retain the title. December 27, 1959, at Memorial Stadium in Baltimore, the National Football League Championship game that had the same billing as the Watershed 1958 title contest as the New York Giants faced the Baltimore Colts. There were more than a few changes, though, from the previous year that GoldenRankings.com website describes. The Giants had lost Vince Lombardi as their offensive strategist when he left to go coach the Packers. The league had also record-setting attendance during the 1959 season, directly attributed to the overtime game of the 1958 championship game between these two teams. A tragedy struck the NFL when on October 11, 1959, Commissioner Burt Bell suffered a heart attack while at a Steelers versus Eagles game and passed away. The former treasurer, Austin Gunsell, stepped up to lead the league, and there were some very big shoes to fill. The American Football Database fills in some details about the game itself, stating that after three field goals by Giants kicker Pat Summerall, New York was up 9-7 going into the fourth quarter. In the final stanza, though, Baltimore came to life as Johnny Unitas ran in a touchdown and threw for another while the Colts defense scored on a pick six to bury the Giants. The Baltimore Colts came from behind to register a convincing 31-16 victory over those New York football Giants. December 27, 1960, running back Tommy Mason from the University of Tulane was the first pick by the Minnesota Vikings in a 1961 NFL draft. The Football Database website reports that also picked in this draft were future Hall of Famers Mike Ditka, Jimmy Johnson, Herb Adderley, Bob Lilly, Fran Tarkington, Billy Shaw, and Deacon Jones. Not a bad class of college players turning professional at all in that one. December 27, 1962, the 28th Heisman Award went to quarterback Terry Baker from Oregon State. The senior signal caller, according to Heisman.com, was the first player from Oregon State to win the coveted prize. Baker was a dual threat on offense as he tossed for 1,723 yards and 15 scores in 1962, while he also churned out 9 touchdowns and 538 yards on the ground. December 27, 1964, at Cleveland Municipal Stadium. The 1964 National Football League Championship game had the Baltimore Colts pitted against the Cleveland Browns. Hall of Famer Jim Brown rushed for 114 yards in the game for Cleveland, but the scoring came on three Frank Ryan to Gary Collins pass plays and a few kicks by Lou Groza as the Cleveland Browns blanked the Baltimore Colts 27-0 per the ProFootballReference.com website. OnThisDay.com website states that the victory was the last championship win by a Major League Pro team from Cleveland until 2016 when the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers captured the crown. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines and let me remind you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com, and you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
Hi, this is John Gidley. Join me each Friday for a trip into the football attic, where I'll delve into forgotten but noteworthy stories of the National Football League. You're bound to learn something new or have your memory jogged each week. That's every Friday, only on the Sports History Network and wherever podcasts are available.
December 27, 1971, the first Fiesta Bowl was played as number 8 Arizona State University Sun Devils defeated the Florida State Seminoles 45-38 per the OnThisDay.com website. December 27, 1974, the 40th Heisman Trophy Award went to Archie Griffin, the running back of the Ohio State Buckeyes. The Heisman's official website states that even though Griffin was considered smallish for Division I back at 5'9" and a mere 180 pounds, he was a consistent and truly explosive runner. The junior ran for 1,620 yards and 12 touchdowns to lead the Buckeyes to an impressive 10-1 record and rank them third in the nation. If you remember back on our December 6th Football History Headlines post, we learned that as a senior, Archie Griffin became the only player in history to win back-to-back Heismans. For his regular season college career, Griffin pounded out 5,177 yards to rank fifth in the annals of collegiate runners, but his 31 games of 100 yards or more is at the top of the list in NCAA history. December 27, 1987, at Arrowhead Stadium, Steve Largent sets an all-time NFL career record for catches when he catches his 752nd pass. Seahawks.com shares with us the previous record of 750 by Charlie Joyner was broken when Largent caught 6 balls for 95 yards and a touchdown in a 41-20 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. December 27, 1991, OnThisDay.com reports that the Brown family, owners of the Cincinnati Bengals, hired Dave Shula, the son of legendary coach Don Shula, as their new head coach. The younger Shula then became the youngest NFL coach in history at the ripe old age of 32. December 27, 2003, week 17 of the 2003 NFL season, on December 27th and December 28th, was played, and the NFL had a record paid attendance of over 1,106,000 for 16 games played for that one weekend. December 27, 1947, Seminole, Texas. The tackle from the University of Texas, Bob McKay, was born. The NFF states that the Longhorns, with the help of McKay, won the 1969 National Championship, as Bob became a consensus All-American in the process with his great job of blocking. During his college career, Texas averaged 363 yards rushing per game, which was tops in the FBS in that same span of seasons. The National Football Foundation selected Bob McKay to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2017. After graduation, Bob was picked by the Cleveland Browns in the 1970 NFL Draft with a 21st overall pick and spent 9 seasons as a pro with the Browns and the New England Patriots. December 27, 1959, Andre Tippett, the great linebacker from Ellsworth Junior College, celebrated his birth. The New England Patriots used the second-round pick to land Tippett in the 1982 NFL Draft, and what an outstanding choice that was. According to his bio on the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website, Andre in 1985 led the NFL with 16.5 sacks and became the AFC Defensive Player of the Year and played in the Super Bowl. For his career, Tippett registered 100 quarterback sacks in 150 games played. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Andre Tippett in the year 2008. Now, we hope you'll take that time to hit that subscribe button if you aren't subscribed already to this podcast, or join us on pigskindispatch.com or thesportshistorynetwork.com to make sure you don't miss a single episode, because on tomorrow's December 28th football history headlines, we'll talk about the action the president did that causes a new football authority to be created in college football, the play that first caused the term Hail Mary to be used on the gridiron occurred, and the greatest game ever played determined a champion. It's all coming up tomorrow on your football history headlines. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items, thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is.
Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? A poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where'd you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football. College basketball art. Michael Jordan items.
And so it was that Marla Delft discovered the splendiferous magic of Row One sports memorabilia arts and products. prints. You can, too, by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's R-O-W number one today for access to the full Row 1 catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long-sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Act today for a 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.